Get it?
Octavarius, so nefarious. Eight legs and a wicked arm. Octavarius, descended from Planet X, ready to save our planet from harm.
He'll make you laugh. He'll make you cry. But most importantly, he's gonna save your life.
Don't let him speak for himself. He's got a lot to say. Pass him the mic and get ready to sway.
Of course he's in there. He's very nice.
He's an accountant.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. Oh, Tins.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing?
I think McCool is still in the bathroom.
That's okay. He'll get here.
Okay.
Don't tell him we're podcasting.
Okay. Well, he's going to know, though.
Okay.
Welcome, everybody, to the Octavarius Podcast. This is episode, let me look at this, 114 of the podcast.
Wow. We're so old.
Wow.
That is more than 2 years of podcasts.
Feeling keen.
Hey, I got an idea. Without any further ado, let's start off at the far end of the room and sound off.
Hey, it's Biwo.
It's Chris Bogue on the dot.
It's Scott.
It's Gustavi.
Let's help you. Mark Musinski on the dot.
Coming at you live, it's Tins.
Coming, Keith Habersberger.
It's Chapstick Cloud.
It's Luna Lauren.
It's Nick McCoola. Nick McCoola here. Got that bit.
Great.
That sounded great in the beats there.
It's like he was.
It sounded wonderful.
Where's Nick McCoola even gonna sit in this podcast?
I don't know.
You're alive. Too many friends.
Life will find a way. It always does.
Life will find a way.
Oh shit!
What?
Oh shit! Where's the mailbag?
I got it right here, Tim.
Thanks, Mom.
That was a bit premature mail opening there.
That's what you were doing over there.
Well, I was actually pouring myself a Pepsi. But today's letter comes to us from Mr. Hawk E-Playoff. E-Playoff writes, "Oh my god, you guys being Octavarius. Also, dear Octavarius." I'm sorry I effed that up. I effed that up so bad because I'm just so excited about playoff season for hockey. My favorite sport, hockey. Have you heard of it? Possibly in that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 movie that is prominently featured there, which I assume you've seen. So, I highly recommend you make all your important playoff picks and tune into every game because it's so exciting because it's a tournament and only one can win, like Highlander rules. Also, I bet you other sports have that too, and there's probably plenty of other tournaments. What's up with those?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's up with it. Hockey playoff. It's not like Highlander rules because the other person doesn't have to die.
Doesn't have to.
Emotionally, though, they do, sort of.
Well, they get to live and fight another day.
You take their spirit.
But not their head.
Not their head.
Did they write Turtles in Time as their only main reference to hockey? Like, at all?
That's all they know.
Wow.
For a name such as Hawk E-Playoff, you'd think he would have a better grasp on the
You'd think.
He's rather long-winded as well.
Is everyone here familiar with hockey playoffs and how important they are to the game?
I would imagine.
I assume they're like
I feel that they change more than any other sport. I feel like hockey playoffs are the most different.
Well, hockey is the one sport. It's the one sport where it's genuinely balanced. Every team pretty much has a shot at the beginning of the year to win the cup. It's not like your big market teams aren't going to be always in the playoffs.
You can say it. You hate jousting. You can say it.
Yeah.
Dude, big market jousters are always in the top four.
Yeah, they're,
for instance, there's been a bunch of winners that are low seed against high seeds that have been just complete surprises.
You talking like Sir Benedrick from New York?
Yes, Mark.
Benedrick?
there are very few... there's... Almost all the conventions are thrown out the window, and the intensity is ratcheted up beyond anything else. And it's different than you would see like the NFL playoffs, things are a little bit more intense. In basketball, things are a little bit more intense, but hockey, they actually are. It's a lot more.
The competitive jousting is coming up.
Have you guys ever had anything where the intensity was ratcheted up that much more? Did you ever feel like when you were in your speech tournament?
I was just about to say speech team. Actually.
It was like, oh my god, we're in state. Cuckoo.
Yeah, totally.
Sport,
you get
so nervous
intense.
It's such a huge deal. In high school, it is like the biggest deal. It's like your life is riding on it. And you're thinking about how, and then like as soon as you leave high school, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, it means nothing. But
it's the same as like I did, honor bands and stuff, which was weird because honor bands work that you audition and the auditions are super, super, super intense. But once you audition, the actual concert is like a month later. And you've already earned your seat, so you just go and you get to have fun on the actual event of it. You go for like 3 days, you learn the music with all these other good musicians that are your age. You get to do it with a good conductor, who's normally also a composer of one of the pieces. So often you get to premiere a piece or something. But all that intensity is over a month before.
It's like...
Wow.
And
it's also really awful because you're isolated in this room and normally there's walls, so you can't even see the person you're playing for. The way they did it.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
So they don't, like, discriminate or whatever?
Yes, exactly. You have a number, and you say, I am number this, and you play, and this is at least in Tennessee, and there's a wall. You can't see anyone who's judging you. You don't get to see the score sheets of it. You're just a number to them. And then the numbers, eventually, they do correlate to the names when they post it online.
That's kind of cool.
It was cool, but it was so intimidating because you had to show technical proficiency as well as lyrical and also scales and stuff.
Performance is part of it, and you have to see them.
There's the thing is, like, the reason why speech team was so, like, intense in high school was because, you're going up there, and it's that concept of, like, in a play, you're all in it together, but when you do that, it's really like a solo thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're not part of an ensemble member. You're trying to stand out as an individual. And you perform in these rounds, and then there's a final round where, after all the prelims, and you're sitting around, and there's, like, 2 hours of waiting in the cafeteria,
mm-hmm.
and, like, the people running the tournament come out with these giant cardboard signs, and they post them up, and you're looking for your name there on the finals list. So there's this anticipation,
right.
And like, everything will stop. Everyone runs to that cafeteria,
yeah.
And I remember... it was like one of the last tournaments of the year, so it might have been one of those. I mean, if you're at regionals or sectionals or state and you're not on that finals list, you're done. Your season's over.
Yeah.
And I remember we were sitting around waiting and waiting, and finally they come out and someone puts a cardboard, piece of cardboard up on, or a poster board up on the wall, and like everyone rushes around to it and it said, like, Jane, will you go to prom with me?
Oh!
And like we were like half the like tournament was like, oh, and everyone was like, God damn it! I won a medal for talking.
Yeah, if somebody brought out the Stanley Cup and it was like a marriage proposal, I'd probably set them on fire.
Yeah. I know, like, for and the Dancer Lawrence thing, like, why they didn't need to see us is because in a band you're one of many musicians. It's not like a play or group in Terp where you're going to put on a show by yourself. You're one of many. And they're forming an ensemble comprised of good musicians.
And they also, I feel like with music, was sort of first to this because it's all about the music itself.
Yeah, dude. It's about the music.
They were... major orchestras started instituting that system of, like, blind auditions.
Blind auditions.
Because they were getting accused of, like, only hiring, like, certain people or, like, people's relatives or whatever. And it was just so... they were trying to break that
Especially in an educational... MTSBOA, Middle Tennessee State Bands Orchid Association.
But
they also do it on The Voice.
Is this
that they do?
I mean,
is this, is this like now? Maybe I'm stretching here, but
probably stretching.
In for music, the most intense thing is the audition, and then you get to have fun with the performance. Do you feel it's similar with the college application process? And that most of your work for college is trying to get in. And then after you get into college, like, it's way less hard.
I don't know for me, because I didn't apply to many places. I guess what was hard for me is I applied as a musician to, like, DePaul and Roosevelt, who have really good programs. And I had to audition for them, except when you get to colleges, then it isn't, blind anymore. Because they're also trying to find out who you are as a student. They actually do want to get to know you as well as hear you play. But I remember that I did so bad in all the auditions for the Chicago schools because I was so intimidated by the people. Because for Roosevelt, you auditioned for Dale Clevenger, who's the principal horn for the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Like, he's one of the best French horn players there is, and you're just in his office. And I, like, remember I was like, I wasn't perfect. So all that did was make me feel like I was so, like, why on earth am I playing French horn for this man?
See, the like, that and, like, with the college thing and stuff, that's all, like, showing what you, like, am I, you know, you're putting your entire self out there.
Yeah.
But in sports and for speech team, it's different because you're sizing up and evaluating your opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And you go into there and suddenly, like, I would always have... Like, you know, as I went on, I got better about it, but I would get too much into trying to figure out my opponents, mm-hmm. and you figure out, you know, you get into...
Now, you were in this, in speech, you're in the same room as your opponents, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And everyone sees each other, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's all, you get, like, it's usually, like, a random performing order at the right. end, so, like, you're sitting there and you're worrying about when you go, you know, like...
Like, I want to go forward.
Yeah, that's you either want to, like, open it up, yeah. or you want to, like, end it. Or, like, if the round, if for some reason there's a bunch of ties and it's, like, an 11-person final round and you go second, like, it's going to be really hard for the judge to remember you unless you, like, fucking nail it.
Right.
It's also shitty in early rounds, if I remember right, because your only audience are your competitors.
Who are trying not to laugh.
Yeah, like, if you're doing comedy, it's terrible.
I remember once I was, like, it's called double entered if you're doing two events, and it's, like, sectionals. And so I had, like, I was in the humorous duet and I'd, like, run over to... original comedy, and then they're like, you ready to perform? And I was like, out of breath, and I was like, alright, I'm gonna do this. It's like, I don't know, there's so many things that can go against you. Or yeah, obviously if you're nervous, I know if I'm nervous for any kind of like audition-y type thing, then it's just like awful.
Can anybody who's done speech team, has this ever happened to you? I guess this is more a question for the guys. Early in the morning, like it's a Saturday morning, exactly, and like you haven't slept at all, but you had to get to like from high school by 6 a.m. to get to like high school by 7:15 or something.
And then
like
some real sexy girls doing like an OC
or whatever. And you're first to go, and it's like,
and you get yourself a little boner.
You get yourself a little boner, right? And they're like,
no, that's never happened.
Yeah,
to me.
I've never had that problem.
Happened to me a bunch.
Wait, like hot speech girls and they're like,
yeah.
See.
Lucky for me though, I wore really baggy clothes, so I just did a lot of my HGAs like just hunched over.
Oh my god!
But that hasn't happened to anyone else.
No,
I didn't
compete.
I would just
so
like
time out.
I don't know what any of this is. So
Mikula just
yeah,
Mikula
do that stuff, right?
Mikula, you did your speech with a boner.
I tried to get it down. I tried to think of bad things.
But you went up. You did it with a
what
boner.
Am I supposed to say like I'm sorry? I have a boner.
Oh, sorry. I'm a man.
Yeah, you never acted with a boner before. That's a speech event.
Acting with a boner?
We came up with it. No, it's called semi-erect acting.
Oh, yeah, I remember you
and
telling
you
me about that.
And you have to stay semi-erect the entire time.
Do you? Are you allowed to like, rub yourself out?
No. No, you have to do it through
you have to justify it.
Strategic eye contact and gesturing.
Somebody in the audience is going to notice you have boners.
It's an amateur speech event.
Well, in semi-erect speech, the idea is the audience is constantly checking to see if you have a semi-erect.
Or else you're disqualified,
exactly.
I'm assuming.
I bet you have a boner judge. Just
he's
a judge
he's limp.
Just
get him out.
Dick.
Oh, of course. In regionals, there's three judges.
I went on stage with an obvious boner once. I was 14, and I was performing in front of my peers. It was other 8th graders.
What show was it?
It was Hansel and Gretel.
My silly boner.
I played the father of Hansel and Gretel that was out searching for Hansel and Gretel.
The woodsman?
Where have you kids been?
Yes, the woodsman had a giant log.
Boner.
And by log I mean my
boner.
Humongous penis.
Giant for a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
Wow. Just gargantuan 14-year-old penis.
It was 5 inches of fury.
Like a canoe.
I don't know.
Nice.
It was out there and it was very clear to all of the people in my show that I had a boner, but the audience didn't know. But the cast and crew was all aware of my boner.
Oh boy.
And there's nothing you can do at that point, right?
No, it was out there. Well,
what about the tuck thing that people talk about?
I was already on stage. The boner was there.
Boner was there.
I'm so glad as a lady that I don't
issues.
I feel like it. You can't. It's got to be tough to tuck it and still act, because you still have to walk like a human.
And that thing will slip right out. Sometimes.
Part of it. Like, part of it.
And then it's like pressing against your pants.
And I want to keep in mind, this is a 14-year-old bone, so there ain't no way that this thing is going down or anywhere.
You know, no control. Something about the whole tuck thing is. I've never, you know, the tucking thing, for those who are listening, if you somehow don't know when a male has an erect penis.
A boner.
He may force it down so that he sort of is keeping it taut with his thighs. However,
the Texas tuck.
This is the up. There's also a back tuck. There's the back tuck.
Back tuck is better for dancing with people.
The back tuck is hilarious because it's tucked back. So I wonder what it looks like from behind you.
Hey, the Ace Ventura.
Okay. I've never done Truth Talk Man Time. I've never done the up tuck. Partially because I just never really thought to do it as a first option.
You've never done the up tuck?
This is my thought. What if my shirt comes a little bit higher over my pants, and there's all of a sudden a little bit of my dick poking out over
the most
right over my belt button.
My argument against that is, who is looking for it? No one would know.
But what if somebody sees it?
I counter that with this. When Columbus sailed to the Americas.
What?
Oh, here you go.
Stop right
We're going
there.
Back.
When Columbus sailed to the Americas.
Dude, I got it.
The Native Americans didn't.
And the boner.
The Native Americans did not see those ships coming because they weren't looking for them.
Also, all of those ships were only half-mast.
You connected it with actual logic. I can't believe it.
And so if they're not actually looking for the boner, and they see the boner, they won't know that it's there.
So wait, does that mean that if someone does see Tinz's boner, they have to go to all their colleagues and peers and explain the boner to them?
Well, no, it's just...
It was coming over the horizon.
They're just not...
They are not friends.
They're just not expecting to see that little pink mushroom.
But I bet you if they happen to catch a peek, I bet you they know what it is.
If they just got a little glimpse of your Santa Maria.
You wouldn't be looking for it, Lauren.
But the eye follows motion. And if your shirt shirt ever comes up, I look at their navel or their stomach because my eyes always gravitate to the thing that's moving.
But it would be so quick. It would be so
quick. But what if Tins's dick is that far out of his pants because of the uptuck?
What if it's a different color than the rest of his body?
Of course it is. Mine's dark gray.
I repeat again. I'm glad that I don't
blood
have this
red,
issue.
Man.
Tins, right, I imagine it's like when you say, I imagine honestly, your boner peeking out, just, I have to say this because this is the horrible visual in my head.
Oh, no.
I have to imagine it's like when you fully submerge a Fun Noodle under the water. And let go, and then it pokes up. And then Keith's eyes are just drawn to it instantly, and it's purple. Alright, Lauren, you were saying.
I think it was about time that we have a minute for the ladies.
Is it about time? Is it a minute with the ladies?
Yeah. Sure.
I think it's time to have a minute with the ladies.
Someone have the watch?
Yeah, I got it.
Like,
look at it.
A big watch.
Okay. Are we ready? 60 seconds on the clock?
Yep.
And...
It's never 60 seconds.
And go.
No, what were we going to say?
Oh, I was actually not going to talk about dicks. I was going to talk about... when I was in high school, I did pom dance competitions.
I was on spirit squad in 8th grade.
Yeah, girl. High five. And... that was the most insane type of pressure. I mean, the stage moms came around, Vaseline, and wipe it all over your teeth so you couldn't...
You actually
like,
did that?
Yeah, so you would... Jesus Christ.
That's so gross. Like, you can't close your lips.
Yep, and they would, like the hairspray, the amount of hairspray and glitter and shit that they put on you was insane. And, like,
you
the moms were, like, crying. And, yeah, it was insane. That was.
How does that affect you as a person today?
No, I don't
does it make
know.
You stronger?
I left it for theater, so.
More. Can you not look at Vaseline now?
I'm okay with Vaseline.
Would you ever put it on your teeth again, ever?
Probably not.
Does the secret party you want to, like, do once more? Have one more run?
No.
And that's a minute with the ladies.
What's Vaseline on your teeth?
What's the point of that?
What does that do?
It makes you smile. Yeah, so you all can't close your teeth.
Yeah.
Oh, because you don't want to touch the. Wait.
Because yeah. Like it tastes awful.
Oh, so you're just so like, ah.
Yeah.
You know what would be funnier? Torture. Vicks VapoRub.
Ew.
On your teeth. Blah. So were you ever in any very successful winning teams?
Yes.
Nice.
Number two at state.
Girl.
Awesome.
I don't want to brag, but my wife was number one at state.
Oh.
Bam. Spirit Squad.
I was, dude. You know,
don't think any of them lose.
Really funny for me as a musician, when I came to Illinois was when I got first in state for the first time ever.
That's
for
amazing.
Anything. And it was in music, as compared to Tennessee, whose musicians are not as good as Illinois's. Like, or at least the music programs here are so much richer. There's so much more education. There's more, like, all the... So many more high school bands are really, really, really good.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We're all, like, my high school band at Nico Valley, which is, of course, also had just had a lot of money, had a really good music program, a lot of good kids, a lot of good directors. But that band, that was the top band at school, was better than all the mid-state and all-state bands I'd been in Tennessee. Yeah. It was better than every honor band I'd ever been in. I got in, and I was, like, fourth chair out of five, and I was ecstatic. I was like, oh, awesome.
Nice.
And I had only been first chair in my school, because that was the only one. And this is, like, all the correct instrumentation for the pieces. It's literally one per part, so it's exact how it's supposed to be.
What was that like?
Amazing. It was the hardest thing I've ever done in that band. That band was, like, such hard music, and they said you just had to learn it. That was our job, is to learn this really tough music and play it really well. But then I went to Allstate, and I got second chair in our division out of the first band.
That's
and I was
awesome.
I was thrilled with
that's
that
amazing.
In the division. And then we went to state, and I got first chair of the orchestra.
Nice.
And it was funny, because they put it on a wall, too. And I went and looked at the wall, and I just started from, like, fifth chair of the first band and went down. Because I just had never gotten near that high in Tennessee. So I was like, I'm just happy to be here. I don't care what band I'm in. Out of, like, the... I could only have apparently gotten into the orchestra, because they've already broke them in half. So, but myself, I got the first chair out of the orchestra horns, and the girl from our school got first chair out of the band horns. So we had both first chairs in the state.
Nice.
But sounds it was
like
just crazy.
Good hands.
Didn't
Nico,
like, play at the Rose Bowl or some Super Bowl? Or didn't they do, like,
they've done,
crazy?
They've been to China. They've,
yeah.
Like,
so
ridiculous.
The China
is there
Bowl.
A difference
they
in
played
how...
the China Bowl.
Everybody acted? It was
yes.
Just that they expected? To...
Everyone was like a college student in their attempt at playing this music well.
Do you feel like...
Every
what,
single
what
person,
does that mean to the layperson?
Every single person went home and practiced their music every night. Probably they played their horn at least an hour a night, and they probably spent extra time of the day playing their instrument. They wouldn't talk at all in band to each other. Even
wow.
When other, you know, when other sections are playing, everyone's respectfully just trying to learn their part in the song that's later on that we're going to be working on, because we know there's that tough section, and surely they're going to make us run it, so I'm going to run the fingering chart for that. And and so everyone's, like, super dedicated, and also there's the bassoons, and we have an English horn player and an oboe player and the correct amount of all these different horns, and, like, we have the drums that they have in the piece. We have everything. Every instrument
what,
we need, we have.
What is your what's your average high school bassoonist like?
Yeah, what are those the partners?
Dude, yeah, no, they're like
obviously
hip, they're lying. hip bearded dudes.
Yeah.
Or they're like hip tall girls.
Yeah, okay. They're usually tall, skinny girls.
Yeah.
You know what? I met a lot of kids who played tuba who would party.
Oh yeah, no, like, tubas, oh, low brass are all fucking
and you find, you
they
find,
love it.
They used to throw all the beer cans in my high school, like, you'd find the old sousaphones that were broken,
Louis
they'd be
Louis,
filled with beer cans.
Yeah, no, that, like, low brass, party all the way.
Wow.
Even the serious low brass.
What about drummers?
Drummers?
Drummers can,
drummers.
They can have, like...
There's all sorts of
they
drummers.
They all got egos.
They're all different.
There's a lot of egos in the ones
dude,
I know.
Does anybody here play the drums?
What?
Mark has a drum set.
That's
Mark,
way
Mark
different than
I, yeah, I have played drums.
I've
now,
hit drums with
Chris
sticks.
Chris can do it.
Tell me this. For those who play the drums, because I've always been curious.
I've never been good at drums or at like or like you play rock band. I suck at the drums.
Yeah,
I have very good rhythm. I'm musically trained, but I just can't do more than two rhythms at a time in my head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel as a drum player that that's something that you learn as you practice the drums, or do you feel that's something that you kind of inherently have to have?
I feel like a lot of that I feel is learned from my experience, because yeah. they're just
you
really
just
complex
that rhythm in your
yeah
head.
They're just really complex rhythms where two well, both your hands are doing totally different things, and you have to worry about closing a hi-hat with one foot and operating the kick with the other. It's a lot to do that the human is not used to doing.
But I think it's one of those things too where, like, you know, any complex thing you figure out is just a series of very simple things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you constantly run into little yeah. things
two rhythms
in a bar
at
or
once.
Two. Yeah, that you get used to and you'll have to go over it. But
well,
then
like eventually you realize that two rhythms at once is just one different rhythm.
Yeah.
Like it's mm-hmm. all one rhythm. You just have to learn what that rhythm is.
You just
and like,
blew my mind.
Yeah, right there. I just,
you just blew
you
my
see,
mind.
And it's like it's math at the end of the day. It's
like,
division.
Yeah. Yeah. One it's, hand can be playing something in 3/4 time. The other could be playing something in 4/4 time, and they end up merging together to make something unique.
Yeah, if you were to practice it like with any sort of structured lesson, you'd get it. Not I don't know quickly, but like
you just use syncopation, man.
Yeah, and it's so much repetition. Like any like. The percussion ensemble at my school was, like, they were really, like, fun, and they did, like, they were all really good, too. They all went on and like, did good things with music, but they, like, built, like, their own PVC marimba a la the Blue Man Group, and they just got, uh-huh. like, flip-flops, and they, you know, they would do fun stuff like that, and, like, what they would have to do over the summer and stuff is, like, just the most repetitive rhythms, just mm-hmm. the paradiddle, just the da-da-da, like... Just, like, switching off with your right and left hand playing and just do it for hours.
Muscles.
He's really, yeah. Yep. And then you just get the muscle memory and, you know, after a while you're not thinking about it.
It's like a sport. It's like you work these muscles and it's, all it is it's controlled air, so controlling your lung muscles and controlling your face muscles to contract and concentrating on, like, how many little things you need to break this into to make one bigger picture seem easier. So you're just making everything tinier. So if you want to keep a steady, slow beat, you just divide it into, like, 8 beats. And if that's still, like, not good, you divide it into, like, 16. And then you can figure out ways to learn what division into 19 feels like. It has a different feel entirely. But once you just learn that feel, and you've got to ingrain it into yourself, like, or 5/4, it's, or 4/4 time is what everything's written in. It's written in 2/2 or 4/4. It's da 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 da. Everything is just that. It's just 4. We like that. And people also like.
Waltz is 3. And 3 is happy birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday is everything.
National anthem is 3.
Yeah.
We have a lot of nice 3/4s, but 5/4
is awesome.
It's great.
Matthew is 4.
It's just, but all it is,
a little wonky.
All it is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You can already feel that beat. So now you know that anything in 5/4 is just played like that.
I remember we do like crazy fucking Eric Whitaker songs in choir, and the time signature changes.
Oh yeah,
throughout.
They change them.
It's like,
oh,
all
it's
these
wonderful.
Different sections and going like fucking like 14 part harm. Like,
do you guys
crazy.
Do sleep?
No, we had Water Night and Leonardo's Flying Machine.
See,
which are both crazy, awesome.
All this fucking crazy music. A lot of places also do. We do marching band, and some of those. When you get, I mean, some of the like crazier. You even see like for college.
Yeah.
Like the college
marching band is literally making music a sport.
Yeah, it gets really physical, and in like these top like groups, like everyone in that group is like really physically fit because you just you're just jumping
just
around and
long.
Yeah, out in the hot sun.
What's
like,
really crazy about marching bands is how serious they are and how funny they are to me.
Yeah.
I cannot help but just laugh and laugh because it's such an incredible amount of work.
It's you laugh at the band kids.
I just look at them and I laugh.
I just laugh and laugh.
I laugh people.
It's just such I just watch them work and then crack.
No, I play real sports, said Brian.
I mean, for me it is. Because they put in so much work and it's so precise, and at the end of the day they're playing like Louie Louie. but they're walking in loops and they're doing like amazing things. And at the end of the day, it's like this goofy song and it's just for amusement. But it's just like so complex.
Well, no matter what, it's
usually
Louie
Louie.
It's usually
Louie Louie. That's like what we do. Think we meet, you know, a couple times a week. We work on all these different things.
You're really one part of a large group, though. You play like it's
and people are just looking at us and they laugh and laugh.
But you don't care because you know it's cool. You did it with like 150 other people. So you're all, you know, that's why there's such camaraderie there.
All
you spend so much
together.
Time working on something, like,
yes.
No one else gives
yes.
a damn
yes.
about it.
Yes, that
cool.
was great. Give me some sec.
I have a very,
I'm
very
fine,
successful friend who has kind of made a career out of being in a marching band and then now is a musical director at a high school in the suburbs. But he joined the Cavaliers. Which is like
the Cleveland Cavaliers, the sports team, which is the real sport.
No. Yeah, dude. They're like, what can we do now that LeBron is gone? Duh, get a horn player.
No, this is the marching band. That's all men.
Yeah, it's all men, and they're like career because
women can't march.
Yeah, and they just travel the world in their outfits and play. Awesome.
Why is it all men? What's wrong with women?
They play everywhere. Yeah. It's just like a guy group.
It's like the NBA and the WNBA.
What's wrong with women for those?
Like,
although the all female drum corps really do suck, and the Cavaliers like always win the national title.
Yeah, the WBCA.
Is that the Troopers?
No, it's not what it is.
Yeah.
It's not what it is.
I gotta say, my favorite marching band moment happened during the playoffs, actually. And it was
playoffs.
It was in the movie Naked Gun when the villain ended up falling off the side of Dodger Stadium.
Ricardo Montalban,
and then and Ricardo Montalban was then run over by a steamroller, and then the USC Trojan Marching Band, who is the second most famous band in the land. I believe Ohio State is the most famous.
Buckeyes
got that famous band. The Trojans
got that
band. Then marched singing, playing Louie Louie.
It's usually Louie Louie.
They marched over the flat carcass of the man.
You know what I want to do? I want to put a marching band on a baseball diamond.
Why don't they do that?
Like, I want...
Because the football field's important. A football field's a grid, so it's easy to have points to...
We should make,
dirty.
Like,
they get their outfits all dirty.
Well, they go by the curves of the field.
Well, plus, with baseball players are always on the field in some respect.
We'll take them off for a minute. Put a band down there. Give me some Mew Mews.
No,
there's
white uniforms.
I think it's been done.
Baseball's slow enough.
I've seen it done before.
I would write a tremendous baseball marching show.
They should have marching bands at tennis games.
Does anyone watch tennis in this room?
Heavens no.
What's that like?
Really?
I actually watch it occasionally.
You don't, Nick, ever.
No,
you don't ever watch TV.
LP Mikula loves tennis.
Tennis is such like a rich people sport.
I'm not rich, so I disagree.
Where did you spend Easter?
No, man, it's totally
Oh, no, that's right.
Sport.
No, no. Easter.
You say you're not rich, but you spent Easter at a country club.
Game that used to play in palaces.
What?
Go on.
Tennis.
Easter is at Barrington Country Club. With that, where they play tennis as well. But no, I used to play tennis with my friend Steve and Mike Nowens in the street in the suburbs.
Oh yeah, we did
that
all the
time. We call it like rough tennis.
Can you give me your tennis grunt?
What?
Your tennis grunt.
I have to step away from the microphone for
All right, step away from the microphone.
There
you go.
It's like... Right. You're not going to hear it over there. I want accurate, not... Just do it. All right.
Not a knife?
Put down the knife, Mikula.
That's
a knife.
The homeless sign knife.
Anything but a knife, please.
No, that one should be back.
Oh, okay.
All right, ah! One more. Give me one more.
One more, please.
Give me two and one back to back. Bolt. Two back to back.
I like how he had to, like, wield his racket.
You're stupid!
I'm
So you were gonna use a knife and do that? Are you crazy? You're in the window.
Seven.
Flew right at my eyeball. I knew it.
Tennis is rough, man. Sometimes you play with a knife. All right, we didn't use rackets.
He likes knife tennis.
You guys ever played tennis all when you were little?
Oh, yeah,
I played tennis like for real.
Oh.
I sucked. It was just like for a year, like through the park district, but it was fun. But we played, when I was in high school, we played ultimate tennis.
Which is,
if you, it has to be at like a high school, usually is where you'll find them, where it's just a series of tennis courts with a big fence divider.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And you get like 5-on-5 and just play tennis over the whole system of
tennis. I want to do that.
It's so much fun.
That sounds cool.
What about badminton?
What about
badminton? I love badminton.
I love badminton.
That's a great sport.
Badminton's all right on me.
Badminton's cheerleaders.
I won a badminton tournament.
You won?
Yeah.
Wait, how did you win? What did you do?
At high school, we had, like, as part of PE, and there was a...
Weighted show.
No, I was just played badminton.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
did you play against the lead, like, trumpet player at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra?
Yeah.
Why am I even playing badminton?
Is there
any professional badminton players?
No, I think that's what divides sports and games. Like, I would call badminton a game. Like, the same way I'd call, croquet a game?
Wow, I'm a champion of something and you want to make it a game. Wow, fuck you.
I'm going to buy you a belt, a championship
Basketball
belt.
Is just a kid's sport.
It is.
For little babies.
It's a boys game.
Little babies. Little babies with knees.
Stupid babies.
Stupid knees.
If you get paid for it, then, you know, then it's a sport. It's
yeah.
a profession.
What? I think things still qualify as sports if you don't get paid for it.
Yeah, that's
not as professional.
So what about
sports?
like chess though? There's some professional
chess
players.
There you go. But is that a game or a sport?
You saying chess is a sport?
No, I mean I would say chess is a game because
isn't chess
going
to be in the Olympics?
It may be, but I think for me, what divides the two is I feel like sport requires physical exertion, and I don't know where the line is drawn because I guess
because then you go NASCAR and that's it's definitely like the most dangerous.
I don't know, like that's NASCAR or sport. It's anything like horse riding.
It's something to do about controlling the car. I think you have to exude.
Yeah, there's certainly skill involved in NASCAR. I don't understand how people fucking watch it. But there's a lot of physical exertion that happens on the
drivers. That's
got
to be the worst sport ever.
It's terrible.
I mean, it all you do is basically burn up fuel, like for
and then
almost you know what
usually
the worst
popular
sport,
was,
like being gladiator.
Being
gladiator.
You're right, Lauren.
I'm sorry.
Or in the Hunger Games.
I simply must interrupt for a minute. Googling is chess a sport to get a consensus, I found what is definitely a sport involving chess, which is chess boxing.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever heard of this? Because
I think so, but please refresh my memory.
Chess boxing is a hybrid sport that combines...
Can I guess real quick?
Yeah.
All right, so you play chess, and then when you're waiting while your opponent is thinking about his move, you get to punch him.
Not too far off, but no.
Oh, really? Awesome.
A match consists of up to 11 alternating rounds of boxing and chess. The match begins with a 4-minute chess round. This is followed by 3 minutes of boxing, with rounds of chess and boxing alternating until
that
the end.
Insane.
So competitors may win by a knockout or achieving a checkmate.
That's
whichever
like
comes first,
that's
it looks
both
like.
Physical
like,
and mental.
I love
sounds
that
like
game.
These are rules made up like by like high school kids.
Well, there's a bunch of people at
these
chess.
This is like an event, though. We've got a video of it here.
Dude, I'm watching it right
people
now.
People are watching this.
Are you serious?
I would watch it.
That's
insane.
It.
That sounds fucking nuts. You have to have the brains and the brawn.
They're wearing headphones.
Yeah,
hey, you want to go one day and go... Go bowling and then play Battleship.
Oh, okay.
Battleship bowling.
Well, remember the boys used to have, you guys used to have your multimedia offs.
That's sort of like a game.
It is slightly different.
Are any of you guys good at chess? Like, you could walk up to someone in front of a timer and just take them?
Yeah.
No.
Not in front of a timer.
I never did timer.
Really
chess,
I like to play chess.
I love chess.
I've only ever won by making confusing moves that throw, like, real chess players off their game because
chess,
I don't know what I'm doing.
For me, it's like poker. Like, the first time I played it, like, I had no idea what I was doing, and I beat, like, when I played against you in college.
Oh, I remember.
And you, that game went on for, like, 5 hours. And then years later, playing against Castelvi and LP, and I won, like, $60 that night. I didn't know what I was doing. It's the first time playing
chess. No, he's talking about poker.
It's the same thing, though. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, But somehow, like, I was like Bobby Fischer at chess when I played. Like, I was just like, I won within like 20.
Can you just
within, like,
make that analogy?
Bobby Fischer plays chess.
He was he was the Bobby Fischer of chess, is what he's saying.
I was, yeah. So, and like, within 20 minutes, I won the game. The guy looked at me, he's like, have you played before? I'm like, no. He's like, no, you're hustling me. I was like, no, I really have no idea. I know.
Where are you walking up to people in the street and playing
rocks?
That they're using the word hustle.
I know, it was my friend Ryan back in the suburbs.
What's your guys' most challenging game?
Shotokan Karate.
And what do you mean?
Okay. Like for me, I love, like, I've never been able, no, that's not true. I've only been able to complete, like, a very few number of games of Go, which I find to be, like, the hardest game.
No, I've never played Go.
It's like nuts.
Othello,
it's awesome.
It's also called Othello, the black and white.
Yeah,
it's
a
Chinese
game.
I've never played, like, the full, big old, like, A Beautiful Mind version
of
Go.
Yeah, if you play, like, a 16 by 16 square of Go, it will just take you, like, your whole day.
Really?
Unless one person's way better. But it's so hard because you can't do that. Your options are very limited, but the board is huge. And so, like, and there's no, like, no one, there's more possible game options than chess, because you remove some pieces from the board, but then you can, like, retake those spaces later.
Interesting.
I was taught that game when I was a very young child.
Yeah.
Yeah,
played that a lot.
It's very simple, but it's, like, the thing that's interesting about it is, like, the rules are really simple, but, like, there's so many, because they're so simple, but the game space is so big, there's, like, infinite ways to be, like, better and better and better at it.
Yeah. I remember it being much bigger than, like, a checkerboard.
It says it's, Wikipedia says it's usually 19
by 19. 19
by which 19? I find it interesting that it's not entirely standardized. It's just, usually it's 19 by 19, which means you can't necessarily plan a strategy based on a 19 by 19 standard board.
No, there is, I mean, it's just you against another person, just whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, as, you know, a 4-year-old, I could play it.
And
it was great.
The reason I like Go is that the game, because the rules are very simple and you're limited, you know, you all each make, like, one fairly simple move at a time, the strategy of Go is less about the rules of Go and more about how good you think your opponent is. And how many moves ahead you assume, like, you can figure out what they're going to do.
Yeah.
All right, it's going to be, like, total shot in the dark. Wink. But has anyone here ever played a CD-ROM, like, computer game? It had Go on it. It's called Gomoku. The name of this game was Strategy Games of the World.
No.
Strategy
Games of the World. What year?
It's the best. There's, like, you get to play a Viking, and, like, it's so crazy. Well,
was it one of those games that, at the time, you'd find, like, in the bin, like, $5.99 software?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too expensive, I think. But you get to go around the world and just play, like, Gomoku in Japan, and then you play Mancala in Africa.
Oh, we had Mancala. I didn't like it.
Windows 95? All right, I got it.
Probably.
It was like,
Strategy Games. Right.
Yeah, I played some Mancala.
It was like a wooden board with like pebbles or something.
Yeah,
they were like stones.
Yeah.
Are any you guys in here euchre players?
No.
I played it before,
but I never remember how to play it.
Yeah, I am also. I used to play a lot because Joe Goldhammer, the bartender, loves playing euchre. And that Comedy Sports thing.
Classic Suburbs card game.
Well,
what
it's
is euchre?
Euchre.
And, yeah, and so they play it all the time. I hated it because it's a 4-person game.
Yeah.
And so it's like if you have 5 people, like a game will last forever. And the people that are into euchre are like totally into euchre.
Yeah, I'm insane about euchre. And I am an asshole when I play euchre.
Yeah, it's
just
play
with the caps.
Well, how do you play?
Oh, it's...
Well, it's you play with the cards 9 through ace. And it's a game where you earn, you know, everyone plays a hand and you win. If you win 3 out of 5, you get points and so forth. You play to 10 with a partner. And there's, like, trump cards, which is, like, wild cards. And there's just a hierarchy of what beats what. And that's really all there is to it. And it just kind of, like, it's hard to explain. Once you play euchre, you get it. And then it's just a matter of strategy to get good at the game. But there's so much shit-talking that goes on in euchre when you play with jerks. And I become a different person when I play euchre because I am extremely...
It's one of those games that gets a little too out of hand. Like
there's always alcohol involved. Yeah, and I'm very competitive, especially with euchre. And when I get a good partner that is just like me, we just dominate and talk shit and then, you know... there's little hand gestures, like when you get into 9 points, you're in the barn, and then your opponent, or your partner, excuse me, ties, like, it's hard to explain, ties his hands together and puts them upside down with your thumb sticking out, and because you're in the barn doors, meaning you're almost to 10 points.
I do feel like that. I don't know if that's
milk the udders. The
I don't think that's a rule.
It's not a rule.
I think that's very. But there's always like little things.
But there, and like, and has. It's a very popular Midwestern game. There's a lot of little like extra rules that go along with it, like the naked run. If you have it's the way I learned it and the way I've seen it played.
You know what? This is euchre appears to have been introduced into the United States by the early German settlers of the state of Michigan.
Yeah.
And from that state gradually to have disseminated throughout the nation. So German settlers brought this euchre game.
But this actually happened to me once when I was in college. We were waiting for a show to start that we were in and playing euchre in the dressing room. And the rule of the naked run is if you win 10 to nothing, which is very, very hard to do, the other team has to take their clothes off and run around naked. Like, and embarrass
them. Show yeah. Is this?
Just like the Germans
this
did
was,
when they first brought the
a
game.
Funny thing happened on the way to the forum.
That's great. Me and Keith have had to take a naked run before.
Yeah. From euchre?
Not no. From euchre, from bags.
Bags. Okay. Yeah. That
I wonder if that's. I wonder,
I saw your
I wonder if that's a cross game rule. Like, if you get completely shut out. You have to do a naked run?
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Baseball
yep.
Had it for a long time.
I've done it twice. Other people.
Till the 60s.
I've never been shut out, so that's good.
God. Yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking at first when you get shut out and you know you've got to do it.
Yeah,
it's like,
I bet.
Yeah, because it was at a party, too, so like there were a lot of people there.
There were a lot of people there.
It wasn't late, either.
No, not really.
Not particularly. And, and it was great because Tins and I had to do it together. We rounded a corner and like a car went by. We both like sort of halted.
Yeah, like yip yip screech.
Hilariously, it was very good.
I got a little frightened about a naked run today.
Today,
it was mentioned to me by a former professor of mine in college, mm-hmm. who never saw me run naked, but knew me to be a person that did.
Oh, wow.
Are there any Facebook photos?
Gotta say. Didn't think, you know, I've always been a fan of the naked run, but I didn't know that my reputation for naked running.
Maybe you're a legend now. College legend.
We just never seen pubes like that before.
Yeah, right? Like,
no, you ran
isn't that,
the,
isn't that part
so
of the
well
shame
coiffed.
Of the naked run? You're,
like he was wearing a wig
just
over his pubes.
You just hope to God you don't look so weird that it leaves an impression.
No, but far I mean, front. I can count on, at least, I can, there's plenty of times that Brian has run naked past me, so.
Listen, we've all seen
Lord,
Brian's dick.
If you go, I'll back you up.
I'll cheer for you.
Costello, you even made that video.
Which one? Oh, the one where...
You said I exposed
it. I didn't... Who said that was me, Brian? I just uploaded that video. This is, of course, a video that I put on the website. Someone handed this video of me, of this person who will remain anonymous.
It was Costello's responsibility as a journalist.
Molested by Brian, all right? And no one can verify if this is true or false.
It's not bad,
though. It's not bad.
It's not bad.
Why does Castelvi have a... Then doesn't Castelvi
it was
have a
given
picture
to me by an anonymous source, Lauren, and I uploaded it.
Do you guys have a game that you're like how Scott is with Euchre, where you're just like that? Something about that game specifically makes you hyper competitive. Because I'm like that with Risk, as Nick can probably attest.
Yeah, I got
you are not my friend in Risk. You
yeah.
are an asshole,
a dangerous
sir.
Game.
Well, you play different too, Nick. The both of you.
I play stupid.
Yeah,
I play to win.
It seems to be.
Well,
a
you
theme.
Always say you play stupid. You're
I make
quite the,
I make up characters like Fetus the Fat, so they're gonna
that's
be
that's
like,
Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh,
you don't
dude.
Play that to win.
Yeah, I play it to get the fuck
I
out of
play
the
to win.
No, I know. I play. Like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing.
We used to play.
I watched Mark play so many times that I know about the Asia ooze, or the Australia ooze, and I know how to play it because he's beat me like 30 times with his techniques. So I just pretend I'm an idiot and accidentally put pieces there. Let's play again, Mark.
What's the most nefarious thing you've done as a Risk player, Mark?
Oh, God. I have so many.
I have another story, too.
But probably the... God, this is going to be so less interesting than it was. It was when... I think I may have actually told part or all
don't
of this story.
Don't preface it like
we were,
that.
So I was brought in to Northwestern as a ringer in a Risk game. myself and my friend Peter were brought in because our friend Pat, who we had all gone to high school with, was in like a service fraternity with this with these two guys who were like, we fucking rule at Risk, and one dude was named Rabbit. And the other guy's name. It was like just some weird situation. It was like a Friday night.
Rabbit.
Yeah, rabbit. Exactly.
Roll them bones, Rabbit.
And they were like we're all gonna play Risk to show you how much better Northwestern students are than you at Risk.
Yo, so.
And I believe at some point, see the trick to Risk is that in most board games, I may have said this before, that all those board games have controlled rule sets that are based on you playing in your own interest. If you don't do that, mm-hmm. you totally ruin the game. But sometimes that works out awesome. So, like, my worst thing I've ever done in Risk was, like, some guy was holding Europe, which mm-hmm. you shouldn't ever be able to do unless you hold other stuff because there's way too many entry points. But So the guy was holding Europe, and so everyone else was like, we gotta stop him, guys. Let's all get together and stop him. And I had just been, like, horribly fucked over a few turns ago by my friend Pat. And to which, at the time, I said, Pat, if you attack me, I will ruin you at some point in this game, regardless of my own, like, needs.
Yeah.
And so I just talked Pat into attacking Europe, and then instead of helping them, I just attacked Pat. who had trusted me foolishly and put all of his units on the front line. And so I just completely decimated him, losing the game for him, but establishing me in a position where I eventually won. But I didn't plan any of that out. My whole goal was just to kill as many of his people as possible and weaken him to the point where he was just poised to lose. And if you play out of spite, you will often just completely turn a game upside down.
What alignment do you think you are?
I play games, yeah, probably chaotic evil.
Chaotic evil?
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, dude.
It's like you're neutral evil.
I blackmailed my own sister in Monopoly. I've told that story.
I remember that.
There was like three people left, and I didn't have any Monopoly, so I was going to lose, like, no matter what. And so I just told Carrie if she didn't trade me, you know, some set of properties, I was going to sell all of the rest of my properties to the other guy for $1. And I was like, that way you definitely lose. This way, you still have a chance to win.
No, blackmailing would be like, I'm going to show everyone those pictures.
Okay.
Or, yeah,
what would this, did. What's this, extortion?
Yeah, extortion.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I extorted her for Monopoly money.
Well, I mean, how often does that happen in real business? It's possible.
Yeah.
It's very accurate. Yeah.
And then I ended up winning that. So they both lost.
Monopoly is an accurate trainer for business.
Still, Mark, that should be your goal next time. You should win by, like, plant drugs on your sister or something.
I'll tell Mom about your drugs if you don't sell me those properties.
Check the left pocket of your hoodie, Carrie.
Like, which drugs? The ones in your glove box right now.
What?
I bet, like, she, like, pulls a chance card, but I wrote on it, like, I found your drugs. Sell me that property.
Jeez. You put it in there.
I like to think you
put
would
it
draw,
in the chance deck
like
on the off
you
chance.
Would, you would draw a picture of Uncle Pennybag, Money Bags, whatever his name is, like with his pockets hanging out, and he's all like coked up.
Castelvi, I'm only taking a risk unless I planted drugs on everyone I'm playing with.
Wow, bitch. That's a lot of drugs.
Where's your leverage?
By the way,
if we're all drug addicts.
Hey, Mark.
What are we telling our parents?
Mark, thanks for the drugs, by the way.
Welcome.
Wow.
But, like, do you guys have games where you're like that? Like, you could
golf,
be like,
definitely.
Yeah,
golf.
Like golf.
Yeah,
definitely
golf.
All the golf. Yeah.
I thought you were serious.
No.
No.
Okay, here's the thing.
Can't you play golf?
I work in an office. I have a sales job.
Yeah.
I have a sales job, so all the guys around me and my boss and everybody, they all golf. My girlfriend golfs. Everyone go. I have no fucking idea. It's a different world to me.
I bet you need clouds.
Golf tips.
That was escaped me.
Tip the day is dedicated to Christopher Bogue. Today's tip is to hire a homeless man or child to videotape you while you make your swings. When they ask for payment, give them a pitcher of lemonade.
This has been Cloud's Golf Tips.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to remember that, Cloud. My boss is going to pull out that pitcher of lemonade.
You ain't signed no contract.
I'm going to use everything you taught me over these months.
Yeah, dude, you got it. I used to golf.
Yeah?
I killed a goose one time.
You know what I used to do? Go to birthdays for friends' parties.
By the way,
happy birthday, Tim.
Oh, thanks, guys.
They must have spent so much money on that birthday party that they're over $10,000 or more in credit.
Oh,
God damn it.
Yes.
So that's much for them.
Whose
birthday
is
it?
Well,
happy birthday, Tim.
Yes.
Thank you.
Lauren sneakily brought back the pop chips. No one else heard.
Nine, two, three.
Now, today, listeners are hearing this for the first time on April 27th, which means this is a shitty day for birthdays, as far as
shitty
I can tell.
Shitty people were born today.
Happy birthday.
Shitty people,
absolutely.
Such as.
So,
4 days after Hitler's secret birthday.
I guess, happy birthday, Arthur Mould, English cricketer.
What?
Happy birthday, Casey Kasem.
Yay!
Oh, I missed that one. Happy birthday, Gerard K. O'Neill, American physicist.
Are you on? You're on the 27th, right?
I am on the 27th.
Okay. Happy birthday, Sheena Easton.
Oh God, yeah, I fucked up. Those were death days. Oh fuck.
You're gonna bring him back to the dead.
Oh my God.
No, Kate Kasem's alive. I was right.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Patrick Stump. Of Fallout Boy.
Oh, it's all downhill from here. Whatever. Guys, we're all getting
happy birthday, Coretta Scott King. Who's dead? But it would have been her birthday.
This curse is already working.
Oh, I, yeah.
Happy birthday, August Wilson.
Oh,
here's one from BWO. Happy birthday, Ace Frehley.
Yeah.
Here's one for everyone. Happy birthday, Cuba Gooding Sr.
What?
American musician.
And finally, happy birthday to Samuel Morse, inventor of the telegraph.
Wow.
And the Morse code.
Samuel code.
Yep.
And to the family of Dale C. Thompson, professor and historian. I'm sorry for your loss.
Whoa.
Nick is not sorry.
Oh, Ulysses S. Grant, too. That's what I found.
Oh, nice.
Ulysses S. Grant.
Oh, wow. I drove by Grant's house sometime I was driving recently.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How's it look?
Stop and kick it.
Nice. Old.
Yeah. Old.
How many miles did it take you to get there? Seven?
Seven wise miles.
Wow. I just can't segue it smoothly at all.
No.
Well, I guess it's time for Nick McCullough's
seven words of wisdom.
Hey, it's Nick McCullough. That.
This has been Nick McCullough's
seven words of wisdom.
They were words.
No.
They were sounds.
They were blap, blap.
If you write it out, you blap, blap, blap. I heard that in the bathroom.
Oh, boy. Full disclosure to our listeners, by the way. We decided, hope you enjoyed the podcast on playoffs, by the way. Full disclosure, we started recording the podcast at the second period break during Game 6 of the Blackhawks and Coyotes. So I don't know about you guys, but I've been keeping tabs on it. Do you all want to be surprised?
Yeah.
Surprise.
The game is over now.
Oh, no.
Oh, let's do it live. Let's do it live.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Wait.
No, are you covering your ears,
no,
Lauren?
No,
do you not want to hear this?
No,
I want to hear.
Mark, are you? Do you want to hear?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Let's all record our screams of triumph or terror.
The final score: Coyotes 4.
What?
Oh, shoot.
Blackhawks 0.
Oh no! Really? That's terrible.
That's bad.
Until next time, have 8 days and a week and week. Say bye, everyone. Octavarius.com.
Don't run for your life. You're running out of time. Close and lock the door.
He's coming back for more.